Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show.
I'm here. My name's Gary Parrish. I'm talking to you from 54th and Broadway, Midtown Manhattan, New York City. Brad Carson back in Memphis producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruptions.
Well, Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I hope you're enjoying Championship Week as much as I'm enjoying Championship Week. One bid leagues giving out auto bids to the NCAA tournament. Power Conference tournament starting to get underway. Zion comes back tomorrow. Tigers play tomorrow. It really is an excellent week. We're going to talk about it momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 420, Joe Mullinex is going to join me. He's the site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. One of the best there is writing and talking about the Grizzlies. He joins me every Wednesday in the first hour. He's going to be here right around 420. When I finish that segment, I'll do four notable stories, 444, at which point we're going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, the Giants have traded Odell Beckham Jr. to the Browns. So who's more fun than the Browns going forward, and who's more depressed than Giants fans right now? Get into that around 444. Le'Veon Bell has signed with the Jets, and the contract makes it look like not playing last season was a massive mistake. He lost a lot of money. I'll explain why a little later on this hour. There's an update in the Will Wade situation at LSU. He's trying to slow play this thing, which is smart on a couple different levels. We'll talk about that just before 5 o'clock. And the big NBA game tonight is Warriors-Rockets down in Houston. Golden State loses. It'll have just a half-game lead on the Nuggets in the Western Conference standings with just 15 games remaining. So the Warriors, the reigning world champions, are at real risk of not being the one seed in the West, which could, at least in theory, put them in a situation where they are in the Western Conference Finals, having to play a Game 7 on the road. We'll get into that during four notable stories at 444. 5 o'clock, Jeff Karkus is just like always. 5:30, Rob Doster going to join me from NBC Sports. He put out his American Conference tournament predictions earlier today, and he says Memphis is the best value bet of Championship Week, maybe in the entire country. Now, we've been talking about this since, like, the beginning of the season. It's nice to see people outside of our market catch on to what we've been trying to tell people, that the Tigers are a real threat to get that auto bid because that game is played inside FedEx Forum, and they've only lost twice this season inside FedEx Forum, once to Cincinnati, once to Tennessee. Rob Doster going to join me around 5:30. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with college basketball, because this really is one of the best weeks, perhaps the best week of the season. You got auto bids to small, auto bids given out in the small conferences, so the stakes are super duper high. You got big conference bubble teams fighting for their lives. You got one seeds up for grabs. You got daytime basketball. I mean, who doesn't love daytime weekday basketball? Like, what's better than daytime weekday basketball?
That's great. Love it.
I mean, maybe daytime weekday football, if we're being honest. Mm-hmm. But daytime weekday basketball is pretty great, particularly when the games do have real meaning. I mean, you've got bubble teams throughout this country that are fighting for their lives right now. Most recently, Clemson earlier today. I don't know if you saw that, but there was basically an elimination game between Clemson and NC State.
No, I didn't see this one. No.
Okay, so like Clemson's on the wrong side of the bubble, mm-hmm. even though they're top 30 at KenPom. They're 36th in the net ranking, so they got good computer numbers, but they got bad real-life numbers. They entered entered today's game with NC State 1-9 in Quadrant 1 opportunities and 6-3 in Quadrant 2 opportunities, so that put them, I think at what, 7-12 in quadrant 1/quadrant 2 opportunities. That's not good, but it is good enough to give you a chance to get on the right side of the bubble if you don't go to the ACC tournament and lose your first game. And guess what they did? They went to the ACC tournament and lost their first game, and not without controversy. They were up a point, final seconds. They had a foul to give, and so they tried to foul the ball handler at the top of the key. Put two hands on him, which is like a clear foul. If you do that at any other point in a game, the referees will blow the whistle and say, you can't put two hands on somebody. What are you doing? So they put two hands on him. For whatever reason, the whistle does not blow, so the driver throws up a wild, like, left-handed runner that has no chance of going in. Then the whistle comes. Questionable if that's even a foul. The foul occurred at the top of the key. I'm not sure a foul occurred on the shot, but they missed the first foul. Call the foul there. Kid steps to the free throw line with like 2 seconds left, makes one, makes two. NC State wins. Clemson loses. And now they're probably headed to the NIT because they're 1-10 in quadrant one opportunities, 6-3 in quadrant two opportunities. Updated number, 7-13 in quadrant one slash quadrant two opportunities. And when you look back at this season, if you're a Clemson fan, it just makes you sick. They've got six games. Decided by two or fewer points. Six. They've got 3 1-point losses and 3 2-point losses. So they're sitting here at 19-13. If you just flip half of those, I'm not even saying flip them all, but you take these 3 2-point losses and 3 1-point losses and you flip half of them, turn them into wins, they're sitting here at 22-10 right now. They're safely in the NCAA tournament. But because they lost so many close games, 3 2-point losses to North Carolina, Nebraska, NC State, 3 1-point losses to NC State, Louisville, Miami. That gets them to 19-13. And with that loss today, they are not going to be in the NCAA tournament. That seems safe. So that was the highlight of earlier today. Last night was interesting on a couple of different levels because first things first, I was at the CAA tournament championship game between Hofstra and Northeastern doing sideline on CBS Sports Network, and it was the first time I thought about this, like, as I was preparing to go. It was the first time I've ever been a part of, not even an actual broadcast, just like even been there to write about it, to document it, a one-bid league giving out an automatic bid. Like, I've gone to Big East tournament and Big 12 tournament and ACC tournament. I think I've been to all of the power conferences plus the, you know, all five power five leagues plus the Big East, plus the American, plus CUSA, plus the Missouri Valley. But I'd never been to a league tournament like this where the stakes really are life and death from a basketball perspective. You know, you got these two teams, and they've been playing all season long for this moment because there's really nothing they can do in their season to actually secure an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. Like, you can win all your games, and that's extreme. If you won all your games, you'd probably be fine. But there's nothing realistic that these teams can do to create an at-large resume. You might get one from a league like this that creates something close to an at-large resume every season. Like, Wofford would be a good example of that this season. But it's not a normal thing. And so they know that, really, barring whatever happens in November, December, January, February, and early March, they're going to play this week, and they will go to the NCAA tournament or not based on how this week goes, not based on how anything in November, December, January, February went. And so you end up in the CAA tournament with the two best teams in the league, Northeastern and Hofstra, and you just can't overstate, you know, what it means. It's so much more meaningful than whatever's going to happen in the ACC tournament championship game or Big 12 tournament championship game, because barring a big, big surprise, whoever plays in the ACC tournament championship game, the automatic bid doesn't really matter. You know, it'll be Virginia and Duke, and they might be playing, Duke might need a win to get a one seed or something like that, but they're both safely in the tournament. It's not devastating if you lose the game. It's why coaches, everybody from John Calipari to Roy Williams, has said they hate the conference tournaments, because they don't mean anything. Just get us to the NCAA tournament and let's go play. Coaches on the record saying that, at least two Hall of Famers. And so that's the way it works at the power conference level. But at the mid-major level, and especially at the low-major level, you really are playing for your basketball life. I was talking to one of the Hofstra assistants last night before the game, And he said, you know, earlier today I was sitting in my hotel room and I realized that, you know, I'm going to come back here tonight. We're not flying out to tomorrow. And I'm going to come back here tonight and it is either going to be the best night of my professional life or I'm going to be miserable. There's no in between. Like, you don't get over it because you don't ever get this back. You'll never have these players again. You'll never have this team again. And it really does come down to one game. Do you get to fulfill a dream, a lifelong dream, or do you fall just short of that? And so it was awesome to be there given those circumstances. And, of course, Northeastern goes and wins the game, and so the Hofstra kids are devastated, but the Northeastern kids are completely fired up. And – you know, I talked, I don't know if anybody was watching the game. I mean, I know some people are watching the game. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many people listening right now are watching the game. But I did the post-game interview with a young man named Vasa Pašica, who's from Serbia. And you just sort of, in that moment, recognize what this means to him. Like, he was having trouble even talking. He was so overcome with emotion because he explained to me, you know, I grew up in Serbia watching NCAA tournament games. This has always been a dream. And he's a senior. And the last time Northeastern went to the NCAA tournament was 2015, the year before he got here. So if he doesn't score 27 points last night, make 7 three-pointers last night, his lifelong dream of playing in the NCAA tournament is never fulfilled. But because he did do that last night on that stage, you're going to see him next week playing somewhere against somebody on the biggest stage that college basketball provides. And they'll probably be a 14 seed or a 15 seed, and they'll get knocked out quickly. Mm-hmm. But they'll still get to experience Selection Sunday, where they gather together and they watch Greg Gumbel announce to the world where they're going to be and who they're going to play. They'll still get an opportunity to play, presumably, a power conference team on national television. That's rare for them. And they'll still get an opportunity to maybe become the stories of the NCAA tournament, because you don't know who that's going to be until they show themselves. This time last year, nobody was talking about UMBC. But then they go out and become the first 16 seed to win an NCAA tournament game. They become at least the early story of the NCAA tournament. Nobody this time last year was talking about Loyola Chicago. You had never heard of Sister Jean in your life. Now if I showed you a picture of her, you'd be like, yeah, that's Sister Jean. In a matter of days, she went from completely anonymous to a celebrity, and still is a celebrity today. And so there's always that possibility that one team like that or a couple teams like that can become a story in this massive event, and perhaps Northeastern will be that example this season. At the very least, by winning last night, they give themselves an opportunity to be that, and that's a pretty cool deal. So I got through with that game, went back to my hotel, and we were going to record the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball podcast, but we knew we needed to wait for the Gonzaga St. Mary's WCC tournament title game to be over, because it's the number one team in the country playing on a 21-game winning streak, and didn't think they'd lose, but if they did lose, that's obviously a big story. You don't want to have a brand new podcast that doesn't address that. So Matt Norlander, my colleague and friend, CBS Sports, we said, okay, let's just like hold off until after that game goes final, then we'll record late night like we often do. And boy, I'm glad we waited, because Gonzaga got his brains beat.
Boy, they did.
60-47 losers out in Las Vegas. It was the fewest points a Gonzaga team had scored, not just this year, but since 2009. They were 15-point favorites in the game, lost by 13 points. So that's a 28-point swing. And now they're number one seed in the NCAA tournament that basically most people, myself included, had just sort of penciled them in for it. It's way up in the air right now, because when you start looking at the resume, though the accomplishments this season are incredibly impressive and the computer numbers are overwhelming, you know, Gonzaga is still second in KenPom, second in the net rankings. They just had a 21-game winning streak, all 21 games won by double digits. Number one offense in the country in terms of offensive efficiency. They got multiple future NBA players on the roster. They just got Killian Tilly back healthy, who was the leading scorer on the leading returning scorer from last season's team. Though all of this stuff, these bullet points, are super duper impressive, the resume just isn't there. The truth is that right now they're 4-3 in quadrant one opportunities. So that's a 58% winning percentage in quadrant one opportunities. And literally every other team in contention for a number one seed right now has a higher winning percentage in quadrant one opportunities than that, and they also have an opportunity to improve on that because their conference tournaments haven't even started yet. So I would still, as of today, have Gonzaga as a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, but think of this like a golf tournament. Like, they've posted a number, and they're stuck. They're in the clubhouse. And now you got like seven golfers coming behind them, and all of them have like three holes to play, and they've all got a real opportunity to best your number. Like, you're sitting there at 12 under par, but they got three holes to play, and they're going to have birdie opportunities. They're already at 11 under par. They can pass you very reasonably. That's the situation Gonzaga now finds itself in. By the way, if you're curious, because this is awesome and sort of unique to this season, you know, it is March 13th. We're just a few days before Selection Sunday, and I really do believe only one school has a one seed locked up. That's Virginia. Virginia's the one school that could lose its first game in its tournament and still be a one seed because their resume, there's just no way there's going to be four resumes better than what Virginia's already posted on Selection Sunday. So you go ahead, take Virginia, make them a one seed, and then the other schools fighting for it are Duke and North Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, Gonzaga, Michigan, and I think Michigan State, those seven. And the way it's going to play out, I think, we talked through it last night on the Ion College Basketball podcast. I think Virginia's going to be a one seed. And then if you're asking for predictions, I think Duke with Zion Williamson goes and wins the ACC tournament. And I know that Marquise Bolden isn't playing, but one thing to remember, he is important to them. But every time they've been in a game against North Carolina or Virginia, it's very obvious that he keeps getting put in pick-and-roll situations, and he's not equipped to play in those games. They're like trying to make him as a traditional big guard out in space, and he's not great at it. So I wonder if Duke won't actually be better because Mike Krzyzewski doesn't have the option of putting him on the floor. We'll see. I might end up wrong about that, but I'm going to go Duke wins the ACC tournament, and if they do that with Zion, the committee will highlight what they are with Zion, which is just a one-loss team at full strength. The only loss at full strength would then be that early season loss out in Maui to Gonzaga, and Duke would be good enough to get a one seed there. The winner of the SEC tournament, if it's Tennessee or Kentucky, also going to get a one seed. I'll take Tennessee, although I know it's a very much coin flip, sort of up in the air situation. So let's go Tennessee to be a one seed. And I've got Michigan winning the Big Ten tournament. If Michigan State wins it, Michigan State will be the other number one seed. If Michigan wins it, I'm not sure they can get there, and I'd maybe give the edge to Gonzaga. So on Selection Sunday, and this isn't what they'd be right now, but on Selection Sunday, my guess at this moment would be that the number one seeds are Virginia, Duke, Tennessee, and Gonzaga. But as always, we will see. Meantime, things get going in Memphis tomorrow on the Tigers. By this time, we'll know whether they're still playing or not. And given that the opponent is Tulane, it'd be hard to imagine a scenario where they're not successful tomorrow. KenPom's got them projected to win the game 87-68, so that's a 19-point spread. That's roughly what Vegas will have on it as well, I would assume. So you knock that out tomorrow afternoon, and then it sets up what should be an amazing Friday, which is Memphis against Central Florida, a team that's probably already a lock to go to the NCAA tournament, a team that was the preseason pick, a team that the Tigers went 1-1 against this season. And though the computer numbers have Central Florida just slightly better, even inside FedEx Forum, than Memphis, my guess would be that Memphis is a slight favorite in that game, maybe a point, point and a half, maybe even two, for two different reasons. No, forget about what the computers show. Memphis is undeniably a different basketball team inside FedEx Forum. And again, the record's hard to argue against. They've only lost twice in that building, once to Tennessee, which is a team that spent a lot of this season ranked number one in the country. And even though Memphis was never going to win that game, they still only lost it by 10. Tennessee, at that time, was beating just about everybody else by way more than 10. The other loss, of course, to Cincinnati, and that's a game that Memphis was leading by double digits with about 14 minutes to go. So this really is one of my favorite weeks of the season because from this day, really going through Sunday, You've got basketball almost from the time you wake up till the time you go to sleep, and not just games, but meaningful games. Teams are actually playing for real stuff all over the country, and you saw that with Clemson earlier today, and you'll see it with Memphis tomorrow in downtown Memphis. Talk more about this with Jeff Calkins a little after 5 o'clock. When we come back, Joe Mullinex on the Grizzlies. Hey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This ain't a wave or a phase, cause all that fades. This lifestyle's forever when you made. They tweet about the length I made them wait. What the f*** you expect when it got a cape?
The Giants traded Odell Beckham Jr. Le'Veon Bell's going to be a New York Jet. We'll get into both of those stories in the next segment. Jeff Calkins going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, but right now he's the site manager for SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. It's Joe Mullinex. Make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
So Joe Mullinex, since last time we spoke, the Grizz have won two games and extended their winning streak to three games. And so now the conveying the pick to Boston conversation seems much more realistic than it did last Wednesday. Are you on board with it now? Do you now think it's more likely than not that they're going to be able to do something like that?
Well, I've always been on board with it, Gary. I think I'm one of the. I came up with a hashtag. Hashtag we play to convey. Come on now, that's my hashtag. No, I think it's certainly much more realistic. And listen, the thing that was always my logic behind it was it's simple math, right? And we talked about it a little bit last week. The idea of what is your opportunity cost for trying to be bad, and comparing that to what it would actually gain you in terms of having a better opportunity to obtain a Zion Williamson, maybe like R.J. Barrett or John Morant. If you like those guys and you're okay with being in that top three, what is the likelihood of you getting there compared to what you'd have to do to get there? And it was always more of a good investment, at least to me, for them to try to get off of this, and I talk about this on our latest episode of GBB Live, our podcast came back this week. I talk about this because you want to be able to have that flexibility, and to the credit of the Grizzlies front office, they have established a flexibility through the contracts they acquired at the trade deadline. You also want to have that opportunity to be flexible with your draft picks. Let's say, again, that you know Bradley Beal, somebody like that, somebody who a team like the Wizards are going to be bad, they don't feel like paying somebody, and it's more driven by that than Bradley Beal being a bad basketball player, because obviously he is a good basketball player. And this is a hypothetical situation. There's no sources or anything along those lines. But just something where you have an opportunity. I think we talked about what if Memphis, if they really wanted Luka Doncic, had the opportunity to trade their 2019 first to do what Atlanta did with Dallas and have Dallas be able to acquire Luka and giving up that pick. Not saying they did. They seemed pretty happy with Jaren Jackson Jr., and I am as well. But at the same time, the flexibility that having that obligation lifted from your ledger gives you is so much more valuable than 3 or 4 percentage points better opportunity of getting Zion Williamson, at least to me.
Talking to Joe Mullinex here. He is the site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com, host of Grizzly Bear Blues Live on Blog Talk Radio. He's on Twitter at Joe Mullinex. So now the conversation among some subset of Grizzlies fans is rooted in the idea that the Grizzlies are better off with Jonas Valanciunas than they were with Mark Gasol. Is that true or false?
Yes, I think that is true. They're better off in the here and now. But I wrote about this for the site over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. And I called it, I think, one of the reasons I've gotten some attention is that the title is Gasol and Valanciunas Are Dead. And it's a shout-out to Tom Stoppard's play of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. I've been holding that in my back pocket for a long time. Shout-out to English class in high school and reading existential plays. it's a debate that really doesn't have any beginning or end, right? Because you can make an argument one way or another that one guy is better than the other or one guy's a better fit. Everybody's right and everybody's wrong at the same time. Now, if your mind hasn't exploded yet, let me try to explain what I mean. Jonas Valanciunas clearly is better at this stage for what the Grizzlies are trying to do than Marc Gasol is. First off, he's younger, 26, going to be 27 in May. He has the advanced numbers to back up the production that your eyes tell you that he has. He's one of the more efficient bigs in the NBA in terms of those analytical ways of measuring things. In terms of stats, his numbers line up with some of the best big men in the NBA, Nikola Vucevic, players like that. He is having that type of impact on the Grizzlies right now. Doesn't mean he's going to have that type of impact long term, but that's what he's doing in the here and now for Memphis, plus the fact that he sets lethal screens and allows for Mike Conley to play off the dribble more consistently. He is what Marc Gasol is not at this stage of their respective careers, and I think it's okay for Grizzlies fans to look at Jonas Valanciunas and say, yeah, that's what a center is supposed to be, because that's not what Marc Gasol is. And the last year and a half of Marc Gasol has been pretty frustrating at times for Grizzlies fans, but you can't allow for that to detract you from what Marc Gasol was. And I think that it's possible to say that Marc Gasol is still a better basketball player than Valanciunas, because I think he is. Don't just look at the points that he scores on a stat line in Toronto. Understand what Toronto wants him to do. Toronto wants him to be a facilitator on the elbow. Toronto wants him to be a player that can help command and quarterback their defense. They want Marc to be another brick in the wall. Marc does not have to be a star in Toronto. Marc doesn't have to be force-fed the ball to be effective. Valanciunas needs the ball to be effective. He needs to be a focal point of offense. Marc doesn't need that. Marc, at this point in his career, may not even want that. I think he likes the idea of being another brick in the wall. I think he likes the fact that he's the third or fourth best player on that team. And guess what? Marc Gasol is the third best player on a team usually means you're a championship contender, and that, or that type of player being the third best player on a team. And that's exactly what Toronto is. Toronto didn't need Valanciunas, and Memphis didn't need Gasol. They found a good trade that fits, and not every trade has to have a loser. I think both teams won in the end. That doesn't degrade what Marc was for Memphis. That doesn't mean that Valanciunas wasn't good for Toronto. It was two teams that happened to stumble upon each other and find that they could help each other out with what their ultimate end goals were. Memphis isn't a finals contender. Toronto isn't looking for a big that needs the ball on a consistent basis. It turned out to be a pretty good marriage, at least to this point.
Talking to Joe Mullinex, site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com, on Twitter, at Joe Mullinex. Valanciunas has a $17.6 million player option. Do we have a sense, do you have a sense, for whether he's going to opt in or opt out?
Oh, man, that really is the $17 million question, isn't it? And it's so funny. You listen to different podcasts, radio shows, all the different articles that get written. Never has there been a better time to be a Grizzlies fan, at least when it comes to great information being out there. 92.9 is a great example of that, of course, as is GBB. Same with self-promotion there. But when you look at that question, everybody has a different take on it. Because some people will tell you, oh my gosh, he's definitely opting out. Like, he's clearly going to opt out. He's going to make all this money. Over half the teams in the NBA will have substantial cap space. We talked about the advanced numbers just a moment ago. He's going to be a monster on the market. And then you hear other people say, oh goodness, he's definitely opting in. Like, it's clear as day that he's going to opt in. He's not going to make as much money out on the open market. I think that I could see a scenario play out where Memphis goes to Valanciunas in his camp and they say, listen, Jaren Jackson Jr. is a young player. He's not going to be physically capable of playing the five just yet. We are looking for someone to be a bridge, because Valanciunas does a lot of things that Jaren doesn't do well right now. Valanciunas is an excellent rebounder. Valanciunas attacks the rim on rim runs very well off of the pick and roll. He attacks on the post on a consistent basis. Jaren is capable of doing those things, especially the parts on the offensive end, but he's not as consistent there. Plus, I think most folks would agree that Jaren's perimeter game as a big man is more suitable to play alongside somebody like Valanciunas, so that they can complement each other. To me, it would make sense for the Grizzlies to sit down with Valanciunas if he opts out and say, listen, we will give you a three-year, $45 million contract. It's a little bit less than what your player option would have been, but it allows for you to have stability. It allows for you to have, obviously, 2 years of similar money coming your way. And we can promise you here in Memphis that you're going to have a role. Like, it's not going to be like Toronto where you are not going to necessarily fit. We see you as somebody that can grow and develop alongside Jaren and help him in ways that he needs to focus his game. So to me, that makes sense. Jaren as a defender, better than Valanciunas. Valanciunas is a rebounder, better than Jaren. Maybe he opts out and decides to go with stability in years here in Memphis, and they can get him at, I don't want to say a discount, because $15 to $16 million a year is still a decent chunk of change. I don't see him getting much more than that on the open market. It's one of those things that the way that Memphis wants to play, and obviously all of this hinges on the front office and the coaching staff and where all that goes. Obviously, he may want to go somewhere else and be a part of an organization that maybe doesn't go through all that overturn. Maybe he sees the writing on the wall. But it might be in Memphis' best interest for him to opt out so they have an opportunity to maybe sign him to a different type of contract. It's going to be one of those interesting questions. And again, that's one of those things you can ask 10 different people and you'll get 10 different responses.
Talking to Joe Mullinex, site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. The team, the Grizzlies, are deep in the lottery, no chance of the playoffs, and yet playing with real energy, playing with more joy. If you had no concept of where they are in the standings, you watch the games, and it does look like they're in a playoff race. They're competing that way, even though they're quite clearly not in a playoff race. What do you attribute that to? Because it's not normal.
We're playing to convey.
Let me stop you there for a second. It's big for the fans to convey a pick. It's big for the franchise to convey a pick. Do you get the sense that the players really care whether they convey a pick or not?
No, and I think that you can argue that people like me who started off commenting on a blog and have worked their way up care about conveying the pick, the super fan. You know what
right.
I mean? People like you as a media member and others that follow the team closely, and obviously front office, all that, these types of people care about conveying a pick. And Mike Wallace on GWB Live, he was my first guest on the new format of the show over at Grind City Media, he talks about this. He says, listen, the mom and dad with two kids come into a game, don't have Twitter, don't go to the blogs as all, like, they don't do that. They don't care about conveying a pick. They want to see a team compete. They want to see a good product on the court
yeah,
for the tickets
I mean,
that they paid their hard-earned money to.
I mean, like, Avery Bradley doesn't care if they convey the
right.
pick.
But right. Long-term, I think that for the players and what is manifesting itself, and it's something that I've talked about and I know you have and others, in the absence of culture, because you have such a random collection of players
sure.
that haven't played together for a very long amount of time, because you have that reality, the opportunity that's in front of them is what's uniting them. Joakim Noah is playing for his NBA career. Avery Bradley is quite literally playing for $11 million. Like, all of these guys, to varying degrees, have something that they're playing for, and that is serving as individual motivation. So I don't think they necessarily care if the Grizzlies convey the pick or not. The largest extent I could see that being a possibility is, again, going back to the opportunity, if the goal of the organization is clearly stated to convey the pick, and if they achieve that goal, it's a measurable goal. You can say, okay, we achieved the pick. Here are the rewards. Maybe we do opt into Avery Bradley. Maybe we bring Joakim Noah back as part of the mid-level exception. Maybe we give DeLon Wright maybe a little bit more than his qualifying offer. Maybe we match with somebody. We go over. We make our own offer. That sort of stuff. All these guys have reasons to try to play their best, whether it be financial, role, whatever it is, and that all kind of ties into the overall goal of the organization. So do I think they break on we play to convey on three before games and pregame huddles? Probably not, but I do think that there is some logic to, hey, our general manager, at least general manager for now, has come out and said this is the goal of the organization. All we have to do is win, and we'll achieve that goal. That is a tangible, measurable way that you can say, okay, they achieved something, they did it together, maybe we can see where this goes with some of these guys.
In recent weeks, Mike Conley has had his first 40-point game of his career. He is the reigning Western Conference Player of the Week, got that award for the first time in his career. What's changed?
He seems a little bit more loose, doesn't he?
I think so.
Credit to JD Bickerstaff. I'm pretty hard on him, but I think with DeLon Wright's arrival and the ability to play both guard positions as a point, backup point and also play alongside Mike as the two guard, it's given Mike more opportunity to rest in key moments of games, and the Grizzlies don't completely collapse when he goes out. And when he comes back in, and he said this in post-game interviews, he has his legs under him. He feels better. He feels more crisp and more clean. And that, even more than, say, Mark being gone, because, again, that's a very easy narrative to fall into, to me, it's more about him having better minutes and better rest and making more efficient use of the rest that he's getting. Valanciunas also deserves a little bit of credit for that. We talked about the screens that he sets. The jumper that Conley hit the other night to help clinch the game, there was no one within 4 or 5 feet of him. Like, Vucevic had to sink off to prevent against the rim-running Valanciunas. You don't have to do that against Gasol. You know Gasol's going to be more pick-and-pop than pick-and-roll at this point. Vucevic sinks because Valanciunas might get to the rim, and Conley has an open jumper. Now, the analytics folks will tell you that's not the most efficient shot, but Mike Conley nails that bucket, and it gets you a win, or it helps clinch a win for you and your team. So I think Valanciunas helps in terms of what he brings to the table that's different from what Mark brings. I think DeLon Wright being there as a steadying presence as a backup point guard and a backup guard in general to play alongside Mike is very helpful. And I also think we need to take into consideration there's been so much change in this roster. Orlando shows up. What's the scouting report on the Grizzlies at this point? Like, I don't envy the scouting departments of some of these teams that have to play against the Grizzlies, because what do you say? Avery Bradley is good again all of a sudden. I don't know what to tell you. Let's watch these two games of a sample size, try to figure it out. Not a ton of ground laid in terms of how to beat the Grizzlies, and that's unique because you usually don't see a team that looks so different at this point in the season, but Memphis is that way. I wrote the game preview for the Hawks game over at GBB, and I noticed in my research that there are very few Grizzlies players that are actually on the roster still. Three of the five starters in the game from the second game of the season against Atlanta are gone: Mark, Garrett Temple, and JaMychal Green. And in fact, only two members of the Grizzlies who played in that second game of the season, Conley and Chandler Parsons, are actually still actively on the Grizzlies. Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, and Jaren Jackson Jr. all played in that game, but they're out. So only two guys that played against Atlanta in October are playing against Atlanta in March. So the scouting report has to be pretty unclear, and I think that gives the Grizzlies the advantage of surprise to an extent. So it all kind of adds up, and it means that you're trying to prepare for something that you don't have a full understanding of, and Mike Conley is taking advantage of it.
Wrapping up here with Joe Mullinex, site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Last thing before I let you go, Grizz are down in Atlanta playing the Hawks tonight, tip at 6:30 Central. You can listen here on 92.9 FM ESPN. That means they'll play against Trae Young, and he's cooled off a bit lately, not shooting the ball well at all in the past four games, but he had an incredible February, got 49 points on March 1st. What do you make of Trae Young making what appears to be a decent run at Rookie of the Year honors, and really, you know, doing things that rookie guards his age have very rarely done?
It goes against the narrative, right? The idea that young point guards struggle and it takes them the longest to develop. You're right, his shooting has cooled off a little bit, but he's just so good at finding his teammates, and he is so instinctual with creating for others, facilitating off the dribble. It really is fun to watch him play. You look at his highlights, and he just finds different ways of getting his guys the ball in the best way that they want it. It's going to be a fun matchup watching Conley versus Trae Young. Trae Young, the reigning Eastern Conference Player of the Month for February, as you mentioned, and then Mike, obviously, the reigning Western Conference Player of the Week. Two guys that are kind of at the peak of their powers to an extent, at least compared to the rookie situation of Young. It really is fascinating because you have to take into consideration, it's not like the Hawks are playing with dominant players by his side. They have Kevin, I always mispronounce his name, Herter.
Kevin Herter.
Thank you, Herter. Appreciate that. Torian Prince, John Collins, and Alex Len. Those are the probable starters for the Hawks game tonight. If Atlanta somehow brought in a Klay Thompson, a Kevin Durant, you know, they're not likely players in free agency, but they're going to have money. I mean, Trae Young, you can argue John Collins is a monster, but at worst, Trae Young is the second best player on that team right now, and he is a rookie, as you mentioned. He's doing things that rookie guards are not supposed to be able to do. So Atlanta Hawks fans should be extremely excited about the future because they've got a young core there that's solid and strong, and they have the ability to make moves, whether it's through trades. Again, Atlanta able to take advantage of Dallas wanting Luka Doncic. They have an extra first. If Atlanta trades a couple of first-round picks for, I'll use Bradley Beal as another example, again, or somebody like that of a team trying to get off of a contract, all of a sudden Atlanta in a weaker Eastern Conference is looking like a potential playoff team going into next year. So the future's bright for the Hawks, and Trae Young is obviously a major piece of that.
That is Joe Mullinex, site manager for SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com, host of Grizzly Bear Blues Live on Blog Talk Radio. Make sure you find him on Twitter at Joe Mullinex. Thanks so much. Great stuff, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate that, GP. Talk to you then.
All right. Joe Mullinex from SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. When we come back, the Giants pulled the trigger on an Odell Beckham Jr. trade last night, and it's hard to find anybody who thinks it's smart. We'll talk about that next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Jeff Cargan is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. Talk Tigers with him, I assume, but right now got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
In a stunning, audacious move, the Giants on Tuesday traded wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., the team's most popular and talented player, to the Cleveland Browns for safety Jabril Peppers and the Browns' first and third round choices in next month's college draft. That's the first sentence from a story in the New York Times. And I will tell you, you Google Odell Beckham Jr.,
yeah,
you're going to have a hard time finding columnists who think this was a smart thing for the Giants to do. A, don't move Odell Beckham Jr.
Right.
He ain't your problem. B, you moved him for that? That's what you got? For one of the most talented football players on the planet,
yeah,
one of the best receivers in the world, and you got that? It is wild that this is a franchise that has been hesitant to move off of 38-year-old Eli Manning. I know he's an Ole Miss legend and, by all accounts, a great guy, but he can't really throw the football anymore.
Not anymore.
The idea that you would be hesitant to move on from Eli Manning but anxious to move on from Odell Beckham Jr. is just crazy. And I know that he had become, as the New York Times story points out, a polarizing figure, but he's still awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw a cute little viral video with a little girl from New York earlier today, and she was like, he's the only good player we have. And I don't know if that's technically true because Saquon Barkley is there, but like he's clearly the best player you
yes.
have. And poor Saquon Barkley, by the way. You want to see eight-man boxes nonstop? Yeah, you got a 38-year-old quarterback who can't throw.
Good luck.
No Odell Beckham Jr. Like, yeah, good luck trying to run the ball next season. Either way, going to be awesome in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their offense looks really good. I mean,
it's really young,
yeah,
but if you started right now just ranking teams you can't wait to watch on Sunday,
yeah,
outside of whatever your favorite team is. So, like, Steeler fans want to watch the Steelers. Cowboy fans want to watch the Cowboys. Titans fans want to watch the Titans. I got it. But if you say, okay, now, who are you most interested in watching, mm-hmm, outside of your favorite team? Like, it really, for a lot of people,
yes,
maybe most people, yeah, is going to be the Cleveland Browns, because they got the star, big personality running back. I mean, star, big personality quarterback,
yep,
in Baker Mayfield, and now star, big personality wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr.
Story number two.
So Le'Veon Bell finally signed a deal. 4 years, $52.5 million with the New York Jets. And the second he agreed to that, it became quite clear that his gamble of not playing last season for
didn't work. Oh, man.
Dude, he cost himself so much
He took
money.
It in the shorts there. I just read he had to make another, like, $25 million or $20 million to even get there, really.
So how about this? Back in February,
yeah,
of last year, mm-hmm, so February 2018, mm-hmm, somebody tweeted,
yeah,
at Le'Veon Bell and said, I speak on behalf of the New York Jets. We'll give you $60 million in cash if you come play for us.
Yeah.
And he responded to that person,
mm-hmm,
and he said, that ain't enough to come run with the Jets. now let me take you back to where we are,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, where are we at today?
He, in February 2018, said $60 million not enough to, yeah, come run with the Jets.
Yeah.
He just agreed to a 4-year, $52.5 million contract.
This guy.
$7.5 million less than he said in February 2018 wasn't enough to come run with the Jets. And simply put, he just misjudged the market.
Yeah.
He thought that because he's so awesome at running back that an NFL franchise would somehow decide that it values running back in a way that franchises just do not value that position.
I mean,
anymore.
The injury concern alone is why he's not worth that, you know?
Well, no, that's not it. It's just that the running backs don't get paid in this league.
No. For injury concerns is one of the reasons for that.
Well, more than that, it's that running backs are a dime a dozen. You can find them anywhere. There are special ones. But it's the same logic. The reason you don't give big money to a running back is the same reason people say you don't draft a running back in the top 5 or the top 10, because they're simply not worth it. You can spend your money and draft picks in other ways, and you can find a competent running back basically anywhere. They run off of an assembly line. So, like, he just thought that he would be the exception, and he quite clearly wasn't. He turned down, last summer, 5 years, $70 million. Last summer.
Whoops.
That's a $14 million per year average, and reportedly, it was $33 million in the first 2 years. He turned that down, mm-hmm, set out all last season to wait for this payday, and now only gets 4 years, $52.5 million, an average of $13 million per year, which is, by the way, less than he would have made last season if he would have just accepted the Steelers franchise tag. He's not even the highest paid running back in the NFL. That's Todd Gurley. So when you consider what he got here, he was going to need to get about $15 million more than he actually got right here to make it make sense sitting out last season. But now it's just like it's a year lost salary. He just lost. He forfeited about $17 million by not playing last season, and that's money that he thought he would recoup with this contract, but it just did not happen. I don't know if it was his decision or his agent's decision, but somebody made a very, very bad decision.
Story number three.
There's a development in the Will Wade situation down at LSU. The Baton Rouge newspaper reported today that LSU officials have said that Will Wade's attorney has told them he will not talk until after Christian Dawkins' federal trial, which isn't even scheduled to begin on April 22nd. Scheduled to begin until April 22nd. Obviously, the college basketball season ends well before that, and LSU has also said that until they sit down and talk to Will Wade and he answers some questions, there's a 0% chance that he will coach them. So he's done. He's not coaching in the SEC tournament. He's not coaching in the NCAA tournament. And so what's interesting is he initially after the story broke, had agreed to talk to LSU officials last Thursday night. Then his attorney called and canceled that meeting, and now they've just shut him down. And I tweeted to earlier today that this is smart on a couple of different levels, and here's why. You don't want to start talking to people who are in charge of a $15 million contract until you know exactly what you need to admit to and exactly what you don't need to admit to. And the best way to know that is to wait to see what comes out in federal court, to wait to see if you actually do have to testify, to wait and see what evidence there is on you, if any, to wait and see what Christian Dawkins testifies to. Like, without that information, you know that he's not going to speak to them until after that. I've heard some people argue, well, if he really wanted to get back on the court, then he'd go talk to them. That's just not a smart thing to do. What Will Wade wants more than getting back on the court is trying to make it where they have to fire him without cause, and if they fire him at all, so he can collect $15 million. So that's part of this. And I've had some people on Twitter say, well, they can fire him for cause now because he's not cooperating with the investigation. And I guess to that, I would say two things. One, you don't know what his contract looks like, so shut up. And B, and I don't mean shut up. I just mean, like, there's a nicer way for me to say that. You don't know what his contract looks like, so perhaps you're unclear on whether LSU could fire him for cause simply for not cooperating being unwilling to talk to them right now. Because I'm sure what Will's lawyer would say is, we're not declining to cooperate. We've told you we will cooperate. But from a legal perspective, it is in our best interest to wait until after that federal trial. So you cannot fire us for lack of cooperation, because we're telling you we are willing to cooperate with you. We just need time before we cooperate with you. So, like, that's going to be the counter argument. And beyond all that, if LSU wanted to fire Will Wade right now and thought they could 100% do it for cause right now, guess what?
They would do it.
Evidence that they're A, don't know if they want to do it, and B, don't know if they can do it. Evidence of that is that they haven't done it yet. And so, you know, these people, like, just sort of, well, they could fire him right now. This is a very expensive and complicated situation. And the LSU's administration isn't going to do anything until its lawyers tell them, you're in the clear to keep this guy if you want, or you're in the clear to fire this guy for cause if you want. They're not just going to off the cuff in an emotional state say, well, if you won't talk to us now, you're fired, because it might really be a $15 million decision. And so from LSU's perspective, you got to slow play this if Will Wade's forcing you to slow play this. And another advantage to Will Wade forcing them to slow play this is he's working right now on a 6-year, $15 million contract. If you do the math on that, he makes about $200,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And if you put this off until after the federal trial that doesn't even get started till April 22nd, and then there's going to be, like, jury selection, and you don't know how long that trial is going to take. Is it going to be a week? Is it going to be 4 weeks? You know, we'll see. But every month that he's still technically employed as LSU's basketball coach, even if he's not coaching, is another $200,000 in his pocket. So just by refusing to talk to them now, he might be able to delay what appears to be the inevitable for 2 more months, at least. And that's $400,000. And that's money that he might need going forward, considering his ability to coach at the high major level seems like it's very, very, very much in jeopardy. So all of this, it's going to lead to an ugly ending at LSU. The more you talk to people about this, almost everybody, if not everybody, thinks that this is going to get worse for Will Wade, worse for LSU, as opposed to better. You know, Will has said that, you know, the transcripts as reported do not tell the whole story, but I don't care if you talk to other coaches or agents or just apply your own common sense. You read those transcripts, and there's just no believable story he can tell to make it where those transcripts are anything other than what they appear to be. So I don't think he'll ever coach at LSU again, but he's going to stay the coach at LSU for as long as he can, because there's a lot of money at stake in doing that.
Story number four.
Biggest game in the NBA is tonight, Warriors and Rockets, and I won't spend much time on this, but I will say that Kevin Durant is not playing, and if the Warriors lose, they will suddenly be tied in the loss column with the Denver Nuggets with just 15 games to play, and this is important because I guess we all assume that when the Warriors just want to flip a switch and turn it on, that they'll be able to run through the Western Conference playoffs and whoever they meet in the NBA Finals, same as they always do, but I'm not sure that that's true because they have not flipped that switch so far this season, and they have not been playing well lately, and they are putting themselves in a situation where if, you know, in the Western Conference Finals, you know, they could end up, you know, having to play a Game 7 on a road. And in the NBA Finals, it looks like, you know, if they have to go, they'll start on the road and have to maybe play a Game 7 in Milwaukee or in Toronto, maybe even in Philadelphia. So these games are important to Golden State's quest to stack another world championship, because I don't want to say home court advantage is the biggest thing in the world, but I think it quite clearly matters. And so that game tonight, it is Rockets and Warriors down in Houston, and a Rockets win puts the Warriors tied in the loss column with the Nuggets for first in the Western Conference standings.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.